Well, good morning again to everyone, and thanks for coming out to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Dirk Herhoyman, and I'm currently the chair of the Archive Committee. Almost forgot which committee's name that is. And I'm also helping out with the recipes. And I've been a member for around about 21 years now. And as we're sitting in a circle today, I'd like everyone to come into the circle of caring. Come into the community of gentleness, of justice and love. Come and you shall be refreshed. Let the healing power of this people penetrate you. Let loving kindness and joy pass through you. Let hope interfuse you, and peace be the law of your heart. In this human circle, caring is a calling, and all of us are called. So come into the circle of caring. Now I'd like to ask Ralph to help us out with the chalice lighting. Are you going to do the words or the lighting? You got the words? Okay.
We light this chalice remembering the freedom long establishing in our nation, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom from the establishment of religion.
We light this chalice honoring those who exemplify protecting those freedoms. Librarians, booksellers, teachers, authors, and journalists. We light this chalice so that by its light we may all read the books. Books with archaic language, books with offensive materials, books which may affirm the diversity of the human race, books which normalize our varied sexualities, books which share multidimensional perspectives of history. May we bask in the glow of its light this morning as we illuminate, brighten, and radiate, because the books we have read and the books we have yet to read. Thank you, Ralph. Oops, that's okay. Hope you have glasses when you read the books. And now, just to get us going a bit, I'll pass this sign-up sheet around and get you going in case you have some books you haven't already told us about, and we'll also hear from many of you. All right. Now, our opening music comes from tune that Rose Smith wrote lyrics to, kind of adapted the tune, which was Come Sing a Song with Me, and changed it to Come Read a Book with Me. And Rose Smith, who for many years coordinated this service, we often did it right here. She might have had us go this way. So this is very much in Rose's spirit, our circle. So the lyrics are in the back of the order of service, and if everyone would stand, if you're able to, or in spirit, Come Read a Book with Me. 346 is the tune. Now it's time for our story of all ages. I think most of the kids may be between here and there off the family retreat, which is out in Friendship Village out towards Dodgeville. And I'm sure they had a good time. We were out there yesterday swimming, helping them swim. So instead of Renee, Barb Park is going to... Oh, you were just carrying the book. Do we have someone? Jesse, you're so good. Jesse was reading books yesterday, too.
I was.
And you were a star. Thanks, Jesse.
So I have a mic, or?
Should push it up.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Was on? All right. There we go.
There we go.
All right. I will. I'm pretty good about showing the books around when I do them. Would you mind holding this while I get it open? Recruiting random people. It works better. We are in a book by Mo Williams. I think it's Mo. Yeah, Mo Williams. Everyone sees it? We are in a book. Thank you. I don't really know how to pronounce an exclamation point, so we're just going to look at it instead. Piggy. Yes, Gerald? I think someone is looking at us. Someone is looking at us. Who is looking at us? A monster? No, it is a reader. A reader is reading us. How is a reader reading us? The reader is reading these word bubbles. We are in a book.
We are in a book? That is so cool. We are in a book.
We are in a book. We are being read.
We are being read.
Oh, I have a good idea. I can make the reader say a word.
You can make the reader say a word?
I can. If the reader reads out loud.
That is a good idea. That is a funny idea.
Here I go. Ahem. Banana.
Didn't make me say that.
Did you hear that? The reader said, banana. Oh, the reader said it again. Banana. So funny.
Do you want a turn before the book ends?
Ends? The book ends?
Yes. All books end.
When will the book end?
I will look. Page 57.
Page 57? It's page 46 now.
Eek!
Now it is page 47. This book is going too fast. I have more to give. More words, more jokes, more bananas. I just want to be read.
I have a good idea. Whisper, whisper, whisper.
That is a good idea. Hello, will you please read us again? I hope this works.
Me too.
And that's the end.
Thanks. Oh, it's okay. We'll leave it on. Thanks for that, Jesse. And thanks for getting us warmed up on books. And, you know, there's that myth about we're in a dream and somebody's book and everything. Is it? Oops. Are we on? Yeah, we're on. So, again, thanks for that, Jesse. So what we're going to do next is go around and give people a chance to talk about their books. There's a sign-up sheet if you need to do that. There's also a QR code if you're into that sort of thing with your cell phone, and you can input it right there. So we'll... Program committee will be collecting these and put it out to us sometime after the service. So what we're going to do then is go around in talking stick style. When you get the microphone, the talking stick, it's your turn to talk about your books. And so if you've got a book or two, that's great. Just keep it to a couple. Make sure we can get around. And I'm going to start with Mary, and we'll just go around that way. So Mary, take it away.
Okay, I already submitted a book on the email, but I have another one to mention, because that'll get put in the list anyway. I've been reading a very thick book by David McCullough, the historian, about John Adams. This is not news, obviously. We all learned a lot about John Adams from first or second grade on through high school and college. But this is a very sympathetic book about his years before, and he was very prominent in the Revolution, freeing us from Great Britain, and then he served as an ambassador in France, although he did not know any French, but he became very proficient in French, and he spent time in Holland and became fairly proficient in Dutch also. And he never lost his poise and his sense of humor, although he did confess to his... much of the book is taken from his correspondence with his wonderful wife, Abigail, who was certainly as much a part of the presidency and of his whole career as he was. He confessed to his vanity. He wanted to become famous and known in history. Anyway, the book, I like the kind of book that takes me a long time to read and keeps my interest.
I'm recommending an author rather than a book. Last week, I presented on Thomas Jefferson, and one of the major sources of my information on Jefferson was from the book written by John Meacham on Thomas Jefferson. But he has written a number of other books, and he is just a marvelous writer and excellent historian. And I just recommend any book by John Meacham would be well worth reading and very rewarding.
Ralph, you want to go back? We'll just go each section and go around.
All right. So I could also recommend this author because I have liked all of this author's books that I've read. Her name is Anne Leckie, but I'm specifically going to talk about one of her books because I brought it. It's Ancillary Justice. It's sci-fi, and it's the first book in a series. And it's got some very interesting linguistic things going on, I think, because the whole book is framed as a translation. So there are constant kind of interesting linguistic thing or interesting kind of references going on, like the main character might worry about what gender marker to use in one language, and then when she actually says the sentence, in English there aren't any gender markers in the sentence at all. And it's very sci-fi. The main character, the narrator, is kind of part of a spaceship. I enjoy it a lot. It's part of a trilogy, and then there are two standalone books that are set in the same universe, also by Anne Leckie. Jesse, they, them.
Disa, she, her. I don't have my book that I read, and I'm recommending the book called Five People That You Meet in Heaven. And it's probably been here suggested before because it's such a classic. It's easy to read. It's a quick read. Takes maybe a day or two. And it's about five people that you don't expect to see after you die. And ultimately, it's about how people and things are all connected and interrelated, and people that you significantly change their lives, or they significantly change your lives, and you don't even know it until after it's revealed to you about how it all comes together and makes sense at the end. So the author is Mitch Albom, who also wrote Tuesdays with Maury.
Mm-hmm. You want to go up to Barb? Thanks.
excuse me, Barbara, she, her. So I don't know if anyone else was planning to talk about this book. Troubled Traveler? May I? I think secretly Suzanne is the co-author of this book. She helped a lot. This book is phenomenal. I could not put it down. I stopped doing everything while I was reading that book, and I so highly recommend it. It is fascinating beyond belief, especially if you know the person that it's about. I mean, you would like it anyway, but it's like, wow, I know this guy that went deep into the jungles of Mexico and jumped into all these different cultures with completely different languages. And it's just so wonderful in every single way, and everybody should get it. And I would lend out my copy, but I need it back. So, okay.
Tell us the author.
The Troubled Traveler by John Gernandt. He's not here, but.
I was thinking he's probably working.
Ron Fry, he, him. I'm, like Ralph, recommending an author. And it's Susan Vreeland, V-R-E-E-L-A-N-D. She was a English teacher for like 30 years in the San Diego school system. And while she was doing that, she was working on her passion for art and also for women that were blazing their own pathways. And she has a number of series of books that I found really great for me to understand art. On the back wall here, if you notice the totem pole print, that's mine that I brought over, is something that was powerful to me, and it came from reading Susan Vreeland's The Forest Lover, and it's about the Canadian national treasure, Emily Carr, an artist. And she was a trailblazing female. At age 15, she was going off by herself up in Inuit villages and figuring out totem poles and the culture and how to get along, and all of that was fascinating to me. Just recently finished Clara and Mr. Tiffany, which, and it turns out Clara is a designer who is the one that came up with the idea for the Tiffany lamps. Hmm. She also had to be a pioneer in the sense that to go work in a shop with people doing glass work was not something a woman was to do. And later there was labor strife and a strike and all kinds of things. So once again, you've got a number of themes together. Right now I'm listening to the audiobook Luncheon of the Boating Party, and I'm getting an understanding. You all probably know that painting. Something on the Grand Jetée.
Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. And there's insights in there where the artists are describing how two colors placed next to each other, if they're the right colors, they vibrate. Well, I'd never had that thought. And it's just useful for me to look at this. She's written a number of other books. I won't go into all of them. They're in the list that I submitted earlier that'll come out in the printed thing. But I think it's just fascinating for me. I might have read that colors placed next to each other vibrate in a dry textbook, and it just might not have meant much to me. But when it came with characters, people that are in love with each other, people that are in a struggle, then it just came along nicely. I have, as someone unschooled in art, I have really no idea if what I'm reading is accurate and true, but I do detect that Susan Vreeland is very passionate about the art, and it feels righteous to me. And the one that seemed to have trouble being accurate was, I did a little research on Emily Carr, and when you read the forewords to some of her other writings rather than her artwork, they talk about how it's really great writing and as an autobiography, not very accurate.
Eileen wanted to know the painting.
Yeah, it's just, we have the air conditioner over here, so if you hold the mic a tiny bit closer.
And angle it
right
at your mouth.
And if you move away from the mic, we're not hearing. And maybe you want to move over there where it's not so noisy. You can hear. Sorry, but I do.
Hi, I'm Suzanne, she, her. And I'm going to go in a very different direction with the book that I've read recently that I just can't stop thinking about it in so many ways. And it's by a Dutch author named Yael van der Wouden. And the book is The Safe Keep. And this is a debut novel, I believe, and the writing is just exquisite. It's lyrical. Some of her sentences I just kind of would have to stop and reread and think about. And I'm not good at just talking freely about the book, but I'll just read a few things. An exhilarating, twisted tale of desire, suspicion, and obsession between two women staying in the same house in the Dutch countryside during the summer 1961, a powerful exploration of the legacy of World War II and the dark parts of our collective past. And this book is a love story. It is a book about what do we do with possessions? What does our house mean to us? What does our home mean to us? It is listed in so many different categories: historical fiction, historical, LGBT, romance, lesbian, queer, adult, literary fiction, adult fiction. It's not a very long book. It's only 272 pages, but it is powerful. I just highly recommend it. And I just also, well, maybe if there's time at the end, I'll come back and mention the other person.
Repeat the title.
What?
Repeat the title.
Oh, The Safe Keep.
The Safe Keep.
Yes.
Hi, my name, Suzanne Oliver. So I just kind of wrote down the first, favorite novel of mine, which is called State of Wonder by Ann Patchett. I've just always admired a really good plot, and I love the plot in this book. It has, it draws you in because it's so realistic. It takes place in the Amazon jungle and all the realism of that, and then it goes off a little bit more fantasy, but you kind of buy it, and it's sort of like, whoa, what a plot. So that's a great summer novel, any time of year read for me.
I'm Mary Mullen, she, her. I pick my books at the library on the table, recommended table, rather than taking people's recommendations. Well, they are people's recommendations. They're the librarian's recommendations. So one of them I just read that I would recommend to anyone is called Bad Cree by Jesse Johns, and it's about a Cree Indian family in the modern time. Well, I think it's the modern time, because when they become 18, when they became 18, they got their allotment of money, and it could be $6,000 or $9,000, and it had been kept in trust for them before that. And usually what the young men do is they go out and buy a fancy car and get drunk and use up all their money in about 2 weeks. And sometimes the women use it for their education. But anyway, it follows this family, and they had gone back to Mexico because the father in the family wanted to visit his relatives there. And when they came back over the border, they were attacked by the law. And she was an American citizen as an American Indian, but he was a Mexican citizen, I think. But anyway, they do have a baby, and they worry then about the baby having witnessed this violence and how it might affect the baby's life. And sure enough, when this baby grows up to a young man, he is mean and violent and drunk all the time. And what the story really is about is how the Indian rituals help him maybe 40 years later to become a different person and a gentle and a kind person instead. But it's just very well written. You sometimes wonder why Native Americans often just can't get settled in their lives and are alcoholics and so on. And this book really helps you understand some of those things and how their Native American rituals can help them become a different person. And then another book I picked up is called All the Little Bird Hearts. It's by Victoria Lloyd Barlow. And I don't usually read the backs the back of the book that tells you what it's about. But very soon as I was reading in the book itself, I realized, I think this is an autistic person who's the narrator. And so if you want a novel from an autistic person's point of view, this is a very good one to read. This young woman, neighbors move in nearby, and they're a different class, a rich class, and she develops this relationship with the neighbor next door, who is very weird herself. And it's just an interesting character study and a way to understand autism from kind of the inside, because the author is autistic herself.
Hi, I'm Marnie, she, her. I have one fast book to talk about, a fiction, and I don't remember the author. I thought the writing that I submitted would be here, but I'll look it up, tell you at the end. I'll look it up on my phone. It's called Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk. And it's quite unbelievable how she manages this, but a woman in her late 80s, I think, starts on New Year's Eve in 1961, maybe it's 81, and she walks through Manhattan that evening in the dark. She starts out in a fur coat and she ends up in a bomber jacket, and the walk takes you real time in one night and lapse time in 30 years, and it's just marvelous. The one that I've been so turned on by this year that I brought it along to show you because it's so colorful inside and out is called Birding to Change the World, by Trish O'Kane. It is just outstanding. I scribbled all over it. I couldn't give it to anybody because my writing's all over the margins. She came to Madison to talk. It's universal and it's local. She talks about Warner Park. We have this gem. I didn't even understand we had this gem in our backyard. There's a group called Wild Warner that I think she and some others started. I see some knowing nods around here. But She's a social justice reporter who's been in Central America and South America, I guess, in war zones. She ends up in Katrina to start a new life when the hurricane lands, and that. So it starts with that. Then she comes to Madison and tells you, I mean, what she does with school children and with college students in getting her own PhD here in the environmental studies, and with that park, and how they come together and fight the fireworks at the same time they raise to an extreme level of joy. All the biodiversity in that park that I had no idea, her dedication to birds and to nature is infectious, and she ends up convincing me, yeah, birding can change the world. When I picked up the book, I thought, no way she can live up to this title, but you gotta read it to figure out how she does that. Thank you. Kathleen Rooney is the author of Lillian Boxfish Takes a Walk.
So before we get back to Marty, I just want to see if any of our friends joining us remotely by Zoom wanted to contribute something. And while we're checking, why don't you hand the mic back to Marty? And if John sees somebody, we'll... And Nancy, are you going to take a go? Okay, Marty, all yours.
Thank you, Marty, he, him, etc. The book I want to recommend is called What Happened to You? Conversations on Trauma, Resilience, and Healing by Bruce Perry and Oprah Winfrey. It was part of Oprah's book deal. But anyway, it's an excellent book, and Perry is a child psychiatrist and also a neuroscientist. So his lifelong study has been on how early childhood trauma and stress and so on affects the child's brain. So he explains that in language that's very easy to understand. And his basic premise is that when somebody is behaving badly or troubled and so on, the question is not what's wrong with you, but what happened to you, because it's what happened to people that causes the changes in their brain. So it's really very interesting. I learned a great deal about how the brain operates, and specifically how resilient the brain is. How he gives lots of stories about how kids who have experienced trauma, stress, abuse, neglect, so on and so forth, horrible lives in many ways, have been able to heal, sort of, because of the resilience of the brain. So he describes a lot of the parts of the brain and how they're affected by trauma and so on. So it's really a good book, and I highly recommend it. And Oprah, of course, who has experienced a lot of trauma herself in her life, it's basically her asking him questions and then him responding. So it's easy to understand and very good. And I did hear Dirk say that you could talk about more than one book. So given that, I'll also recommend my fourth book, novel, work of fiction, Poor Tom, which some of you may have heard me talk about previously. It's a novel, it's sort of a father-son novel in a couple of different ways, mostly with the narrator, Julius, struggling to take care of his own father, his aged father, who was a classical actor, played a lot of Shakespeare, and his big goal was to finally play King Lear. It was going to be the role of his life before he retired. He does, and then he feels that he failed at it, and he sort of falls apart, like Lear did. So it's a good read, and one interesting part of it is that those of you who may have been around Madison for a very long time may recognize some of the sort of well-known street characters of the 1960s and 1970s and beyond, like Scanner Dan, Tunnel Terry, Art the Window Washer, and Snowball, if any of you remember those, any of those people. So it's very good. And I would like to just say one final thing if we're talking about books, and I'd like to give a shout out to Mary Franz, who's over there. Some of you may know that one of the ways I advertise my, try to advertise my books is by posting a picture on Facebook of somebody reading my book, and then with some text, which is the lie that I just chanced upon this person, because they're all posed pictures, and then saying, oh, this is a wonderful thing. I just came upon this person reading my book, and asked if I could take a picture of them. So I did that a few weeks ago with Mary, and I'm gonna take a second to, I'll show you the picture later if you wanna see it, but here's the text that went along with that. And Mary, I thank you very much. While on a meandering stroll, I chanced upon this 102-year-old woman, I know that's an exaggeration, sorry. Mary, a retired physician, sitting on an ancient bench and reading my book, 10 Nobodies and Their Somebodies, which was recently republished. The book consists of 10 first-person narratives by fictional nobodies who worked for or otherwise served famous people in history, the somebodies of the title, ranging from William Shakespeare in 1595 to Jewish mobster Meyer Lansky in 1975. Mary said that she likes reading history and historical fiction. Heck, she said, I've been around for a lot of history, not all of it nice. She was reading the chapter entitled A Tea Party Assistant for Lewis Carroll and said that she adored the 10-year-old narrator, Mimsy. She reminds me of me, she said, quite independent. So thank you, Mary.
Does somebody want to talk, John? Yeah, let's go to our remote friends and they can introduce themselves if they're able to.
Oh,
if you want,
just wait for
attention
the video.
To the front for just a second.
Just a second. Lynn, I see you. Hang on just a minute. And go ahead and unmute. Can you hit the front light? The lights. Okay, Lynn, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I read The Rediscovery of America. My son sent me this book for Christmas. It is by Ned Blackhawk, who is a Northern Shoshone Indian and the professor of history and American studies at Yale University. He talked about the Native American, what they endured through all of the different colonization, starting with the Spaniards in early times, going through the colonists, and then ending up in modern times where they're trying to make inroads to become full-fledged Americans. they're so much, you know, they're just human beings, and I think that we really, from history, have learned to think of them as a little bit apart from us, but it shows that there was so much, you know, they wanted so much the same things that we want, but and they were given such a bad rap through history, and it changed my whole perspective about this civilization. anyway, I recommend it.
Thanks, Lynn. Ruth, do you have a book for us?
Oh, wait, there's one more.
Nope, she turned her video off. I guess that's it.
All right, thanks. All right, we're over to this side.
Hi, Paula, she, her. This is a newly released book. If you've ever read The Perfect Storm by Sebastian Younger, you'll know the quality of his writing. He has a military background. He also has a journalistic background and then his literary background. He's also an atheist, humanist atheist, and this has been part of his identity for years. He had a medical emergency, and he almost died several times. He did survive it, but he did have a near-death experience, and this leads to this beautifully written book. It's the step-by-step account of what happened. He was away, you know, he was in a cabin in the woods. When the aneurysm burst, he couldn't get help. His wife, who was 50 pounds lighter than him, had to practically carry him, and different barriers to his even getting to a hospital. But so the medical part of it is riveting, but it's interspersed with his looking into, scientific background, you know, quantum mechanics, philosophical understanding of life and the death experience, theology even. And I haven't finished it yet, so I don't know yet what conclusions he's drawn. I have read a little bit of the book review, but it's very well done. And he, this experience, this vision that he had of his father who had been deceased 12 years made him rethink his assumptions, and he's approaching the issue with trying not to have any assumptions and trying with fresh eyes to look at and understand this experience. And I just wanted to mention in passing, A Gentleman in Moscow. It's a series now. I'm not recommending the series. I haven't seen it. The book itself is by Amor Towles. It's a delightful read. And also Going Postal, which is by Terry Pratchett. It's very funny. It's so fantastical. It's hard to describe, but it's a great escape. And it just makes you laugh at very unexpected places. It's very funny. So Going Postal, A Gentleman in Moscow. And the Sebastian Younger book is, it's a long title. In My Time of Dying, How I Came Face to Face with the Afterlife, or the Question of the Afterlife. In My Time of Dying, How I Came Face to Face with the Idea of an Afterlife.
I'm Toby. I am recommending The Steerswoman, or that's the first in the series. I'm recommending the series. By Rosemary Kirstein. It's, at first glance, it appears to be a classic fantasy novel with like wizards and goblins and stuff, but reading it is quite unlike reading any other fantasy novel. It's about figuring out the world and using logic and clear thinking and evidence and truth and sharing information and like uncovering the mystery carefully. And it's a very, very interesting read, I think. That's The Steerswoman by Rosemary Kirstein.
Can't see him. So I guess one thing, I haven't read this book, this most recent book by Sebastian Younger, but I've read a bunch of his other books, and he's one of my favorite nonfiction authors. So lots of worthwhile stuff to check out by him. And then when we sang the song, there was a section about a quote, about quotes, and it made me think of something. And unfortunately, I didn't come prepared for this, so I don't remember who said this, and I may not get it exactly right. But anyhow, the quote was something like, humanity's fundamental problem is that we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And I thought, humanity's fundamental problem is that we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And I thought that was really profound. But anyhow, I'm just going to talk about one book here, which I put on the website if anybody's looking at that. But anyhow, the book is Far From the Tree, Parents, Children, and the Search for Identity by Andrew Solomon. And sort of the premise of the book is that he looks at different ways in which children can be really different from their parents. Not like, you know, you run off to a commune and your dad's a CEO or something like that, but things like, so Andrew Solomon is gay. So that's one thing is, you know, what happens when a child is gay and how does that affect the relationship with the parents? But then he goes into a lot of other things that are even, you know, like, what if your child is deaf? What if your child has Down syndrome? What if your child has schizophrenia? And sort of a lot of what he explores is how these differences affect the relationship between the parents and the child. But the thing that maybe really made me think about it is I felt like it was also sort of an exploration of what does it mean to have a valuable life? Like if somebody, say, has very severe schizophrenia, what can they do in their life that somehow has some value? And so it really gets at some fundamental questions, and I felt like it kind of challenged some of my own preconceived ideas. And Mary would like it because it's like 1,000 pages, so it's a very long read. And then he also talked about things like how are people affected by differences that are visible, like say dwarfism versus differences that are not visible, like schizophrenia or something, and sort of how society views this. And so I would say that maybe more than just about any book I've read, it was a book that really kind of made me challenge my own assumptions and really do some thinking about things. So super, like not an easy read or anything, but a really, really interesting and challenging book.
Hey, Dirk, I do have one more.
Joanna, if we could just wait a second and go ahead with Ruth or John.
Okay, Ruth Doherty, she, hers. I buy so many books. I couldn't really pick one. I really liked last year's session, and I did buy many of those books. And this year looks exceptionally good, and I'll be glad to see the list. So what I'm offering, I've been watching Allie Velshi's Band Book Club on Saturdays, and they're featuring a lot of children's books. So I'm just going to mention a kid's book about Israel and Palestine, written by a writer and scholar of religions. And it's something I'd like to donate to Prairie if the children's program would like to have it. My sister has a story. She volunteers at the library in Waupaca. And apparently Wisconsin has some laws that makes it more difficult to ban books than some places. But they did have one request to ban a book about two male penguins who are raising a baby which I thought was funny. Anyway, I look forward to seeing the list. Let me know if you want the book. Thanks.
That it, Ruth?
Yep.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, Joanna, over to you. Thanks.
So I'm Johanna, she, her, and I recommended two books in the form. The first one is called When Women Were Dragons by Kelly Barnhill, which is a really fun, magical realism, alternate history that takes place in a small town in Wisconsin. And it imagines a world in which in 1955, the Great Dragoning takes place, in which 200,000 women spontaneously turn into dragons. And then the attempts of the federal government to cover it up and what happens to the families that are left behind. It was a really fun read. And the protagonist studies at UW-Madison. So it's, and I didn't know that before I picked up the book. So that was kind of a fun surprise. The second book I wanted to recommend is, the title is Stolen, and the author is, make sure I say it correctly, Anne Helen Lestadis. And I picked it up because it was translated from Swedish to English by a friend of mine, Rachel Wilson Broyles, who is a, that is her job. She just gets to translate cool novels from Swedish to English. But it is a really interesting book. If you like, you know, mystery, crime, it also looks at issues of indigenous rights, climate change, because it centers around a young Sami woman in Sweden named Elsa, and kind of this ongoing, these ongoing crimes against the indigenous community's reindeer herd and what it means for the community, what it means for the young people. And yeah, it was just, it was a really, really interesting read. So those are my two.
Hi, I'm Evan, he, him. Something that I've been really enjoying lately, which is not something that's been about challenging reading or growth or learning. And it's not an author that everyone's heard of her, but I've been really enjoying Agatha Christie. I've been, I'm just going to put a shout out there for just reading for entertainment and things that are fun to read. I had not seen the movie, so the twist of Murder on the Orient Express was really great. a lesser known one, Endless Night, was one I really enjoyed. So just going to put those out there.
Yeah, I started reading Agatha Christie when she died and realized I'd never read an Agatha Christie. So I read them all. Little excess there. But the book that I'm talking about is A Psalm for the Wild Built. And it's by Becky Chambers. This is the second in the series that I brought, but it's a very optimistic, short, very optimistic book about it. She is a science fiction writer, but this is, I guess, different than her normal books. And it takes place on a small moon that was running itself, and the civilization was running itself into the ground technologically. So 50 years before this is set, they take half of the moon and ban people from it. So the civilization, so they leave that to turn wild. And there are robots that are sentient. And the robots all leave because of the anti-technology bend now of society. So they all go off. So they have not, the people haven't seen the robots, and the robots haven't seen the people for 50 years. And that's told from the viewpoint of a person who is works a tea service. It's part of a religion where they go off in a cart and set up in a different town and serve tea as kind of a religious practice. And whoever wants can come have tea and talk with this person or not. But they begin to get a little disgusted or run out of steam for this. And they go off into the woods where people don't normally go, and run into a robot whose task has been set by the other robots, or he volunteered to come see what's happening to the people after 50 years. And so they go off together and have these wonderful philosophical conversations that just absolutely make the book. So it's a really wonderful read.
Like Mary, I want to recommend a David McCulloch book. The title, a long title, The Pioneers, the heroic story of the settlers who brought the American ideal west. The Northwest Ordinance was created by the Continental Congress in 1787. And this is the story about individuals who came west over the Alleghenies, which apparently was a very difficult travel to Ohio. And we get a bit of the history that's really worth finding out about. And I want to emphasize that in the very first chapters, we're hearing about the fact that the Northwest Ordinance was really a corporation purchasing land west of the Alleghenies. And included in the contract for the Northwest Ordinance was an item for religious freedom in that area, which really has an important part of our history.
I'm Millie Moffitt, she, hers. The book I want to tell you about is The Kite Runner, which I read this summer. It was wonderful. I saw a production of The Kite Runner at the Capitol Theater in Madison, the Overture, in May. And so it was that kind of enticed me to read the book. It is a long book. It is kind of an historical novel, but isn't classed as that. I would say it is that. That's my favorite thing to read. Part of it is in Kabul, the early Kabul, the wonderful Kabul, the Kabul that we like to think about, the smells, the feels, the people. It was so precious. Then we get into the middle part. The Taliban comes in and Kabul is destroyed. And so we see the other side of Kabul. In the midst of all this are two young men who are very fast friends. One is a servant in the family. The other is the son of the very wealthy parents. The two boys become very close when they are young. When they age, they separate. And so the story goes on, and it will be for you to find out. Do the boys see each other again? Is there any reconciliation? Is there any forgiveness? All these things take place. It's a wonderful story.
So Al gave me lessons in chemistry, which I really needed because I never took chemistry. It's by Bonnie Garmus, and a lot of you have probably read it already. I've enjoyed it because it told the story of a woman in the 60s who became a chemist, and that's the time that I was in college, was in the 60s. She became a chemist and had to deal with the chauvinism of the professionals that she was working with. And I won't tell what the whole thing title means, but she found a way to use chemistry in another way. And we also gave it at the same time to our granddaughter, who was enjoying science in high school. But when she was little, she used to pretend she was doing talk show cooking shows, because her mother watched so many, and she would come over and we would do cooking together, and she would do a narration as she was making chocolate chip cookies and things. And so anyway, that might give you a hint as to what happens in the book, but it's extremely well written from a, it reads like fiction, although it's fiction. Yes, it's fiction. It's under F, but what a story.
Amber, did you have something to share? Okay. Next to Karen.
Hi, I am Karen Smith, just Karen. I have two books I would like to recommend. One is by a Unitarian minister, strangely enough. I had lost a dog that I had had for 15 years, and the only one of my friends who sent me a sympathy card was Gina, and which was really nice to receive. And we had a conversation about how hard it was to share the grief that you felt for a pet, that even some pet owners don't understand it. And there wasn't room for that. And so because she had a dog that was aging, I went looking for a book, and she was saying she couldn't find a book that really dealt with the issue. And I found one for her. But, and it's Goodbye Friend, Healing Wisdom for Anyone Who Has Ever Lost a Pet, by Gary Kowalski. So if you're looking for something to give to someone who has lost a pet to acknowledge their grief, it's a very good book. But in the process of doing that, you know, one of these serendipitous things, I found a book that I just had never seen the likes of. It's called The Wild Edge of Sorrow, Rituals of Renewal, and The Sacred Work of Grief by Francis Waller. He is a psychologist or psychotherapist, I don't remember now which. But what's interesting about it, in his own practice, he was helping people grieve for the environment and the loss of what's going on because of climate change, and how important that was, and how it was really shutting down people's creativity because they had nowhere to express it. So he started doing very simple rituals and inviting people, either from his practice or people, the general public, to come, and had these simple rituals out in the woods. And he would hear back from some of them who weren't particularly his clients, how profoundly important that was in kind of releasing energy and giving them hope and, you know, creating a space where they felt they could go on and confront what needed to be confronted. So I was really impressed with that book. There's very few books out that deal really with that subject. And it made me think that at some point I'd like to, if people were interested, provide a time maybe for Prairie to do that. Wild Edge of Sorrow, Rituals of Renewal, and The Sacred Work of Grief by Francis Waller. Yes.
Great. One last book here, quickly. The last book by Michael Crichton, who's no longer with us, passed away a few years ago, and the name is Eruption. Sorry, I had to do that. The backstory is that Crichton's wife found papers of this manuscript in the works after he passed, and it's about Hawaii, it's about Mauna Loa and some researchers around that, but they lived in Hawaii quite a bit, and so he had spent quite a bit of time researching this, but didn't have a chance to finish it. They got together with another noted science author, James Patterson, and book's just been released. Susan and I managed to read it before it had to go back to the library because it's on the new release shelf. If that's your cup of tea, this kind of science book, it's a pretty fast read. Eruption by Michael Crichton. All right. So thanks, everyone, for sharing. Maybe one or two minutes over, but hey, it's good. Now we're going to do our offering, our And we're sharing this quarter with Heart Room, a collaboration between families that have been homeless, the Orchard Ridge, UUC, and the Road Home. The money we contribute will be used for rental assistance for the families. Do we have helpers with the offertory? Nancy's going to bring that around. And if you want to go ahead and start the offertory music, Amber, it's Solitude by Duke Ellington. Thank you. Thanks again, Amber. And now for our closing music, number 382 in the Gree hymnal, I sought the woman. 328, sorry. I sought the wood in summer, accompanied by Amber. If you would, please rise in body or in spirit. Thank you. thanks everyone for that. Now a few announcements. Next Sunday, our service will be a General Assembly debrief. Joanna is going to be with us, as well as Randy Converse, and they'll recap what happened. They were virtual delegates, and so thanks a lot for representing us, Joanna, and we'll look forward to hearing you next Sunday. Also in RE next Sunday, there'll be a field trip to the Fitchburg Splash Pond at McKee Park. They just can't get enough of these trips out, so that's great. And I don't see any parents here. And right, we'll give you a chance. After the service, there'll be a visitor's orientation. You can see Disa out at a table. And now Eileen has one more announcement.
So I hope you're all aware there is an August 13th primary election coming up. It includes two state constitutional amendment proposals. If you would like to read a summary from the League of Women Voters, I have paper copies with me today. I won't be staying around long.
Thanks for that. Unless we have any other late-breaking announcements, we'll close down the recording and move into a time for joys and concerns.